only after doing pre-pro you really know what the song still needs and if the songs are already there, and almost every time there is something you could still improve and you just don't know until you do pre-production.
This is the Self-Recording Band Podcast, the show where we help you make exciting records on your own, wherever you are, DIY style. Let's go.
Hello and welcome to the Self-Recording Band Podcast. My name is Benedikt Hein. And before we get into today's episode, I want to tell you that we are on episode 15. And if you enjoyed this podcast and if you got something out of it, if you have enjoyed the episode so far, I want to let you know that I've created a 10-step guide to successful DIY recording. It's a PDF, basically like a mini ebook that you can download completely for free that walks you through 10 steps from writing to arranging, pre-production, and finally recording your songs and getting mix-ready tracks in your practice room. You can download that by going to theselfrecordingband.com/10-step guide. And now on to today's episode. I'm here with my co-host, mastering engineer, Malcolm Owen Flood. Hello, Malcolm. How are you?
Hello. I'm great, man. Things are good. We are, as of today, I think, actually, what's the date here? The 18th of May, lifting, I guess it's not the 18th of May when people are listening to this at all, but it's the 18th of May while we're recording it. So, but lockdown restrictions are being laxed up a little bit.
In
on Vancouver Island and BC anyways, not the same across the whole country, I don't think, but things are getting a little bit more normal. Long way to go, but it's exciting.
Yeah, that's absolutely exciting.
We can have like gatherings of 6 people now, I think. So, still like spread out, but that's awesome. It'll be nice to see some friends and stuff like that.
Yeah, so, like totally same here. I'm a little worried that we will see like a second wave, but I hope not. I hope that people stay responsible and like do it, like get back to normal, but slowly. So, but if it stays like that and restrictions go away, it's definitely a very, very good thing. And we also feel very relieved here now, being able to see our families again and friends and everything. So yeah, totally get that. Did you already start, or do you have any recording projects or whatever right now? Did you start doing stuff like that?
Yeah, so I actually took on more like production and engineering stuff over the internet through all of this. It was kind of like, okay, things are different. I'm going to say yes to like not just mastering work and kind of make sure I'm keeping my foot in a couple different projects. And I also had a couple already on the go. So I've been doing more engineering than ever.
Yeah, really?
Doing a bit of stuff over the internet. There's some pretty crazy cool plugins called, or the one I'm using anyways is called Listen To by Audio Movers. And it actually, I think you've already been using that, Benny, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty wild. I can just send like a live stream, high quality live stream of the mix right to my client over the internet, and they can be listening in pretty close to real time. With Zoom, I can see what they're doing and kind of they can be recording it on their side and I can be coaching it or whatever kind of arrangement. So been making things work that way. Just yesterday, I had a client in for the first time since all of this happened. So I had somebody in the vocal booth and that was awesome. It's like, we're really doing it again, you know, it felt normal.
Well, that's good news. Yeah, like Audio Movers is insane. I don't know if that's, maybe that could be relevant for some of our audience as well. If you're collaborating, recording, like check that out. It's the company's called Audio Movers and the plugin is called Listen To. And we're not sponsored or anything by this. We're just saying it because it's a great product. And it's like, yeah, it's what I found the best tool for that, to do live streams in high quality straight from the DAW to another person's DAW, basically, or to the browser of the client.
Yeah, and I really appreciate them. Like they're keeping their price so affordable through all of this when, you know, they made a product that they had no idea was going to be so relevant when quarantine happened. So their popularity probably just jumped through the roof and they kept their rates so darn cheap. Like it's really, really cheap.
Yeah.
And then they also have like a free trial as well for bands that are kind of wondering if they could apply this to, you know, even like communicating with your bandmates, you know, writing stuff together, this would be a good way to go about it.
Sure. Absolutely. Go check that out. You might find it valuable. Yeah. Actually, that wasn't planned, but that's actually pretty on topic for today's episode
because
we are talking about producing and about collaborating and working on songs. We're talking about pre-production. And we're talking about the stage of the process where it's you record your songs, but you're not really recording it, like not the final version of it. It's a step before that. And you might ask, like, why do I need something like pre-production? And we are trying to explain what that is and why it is so important. And I found that many people go straight from the writing and arranging process to the recording stage. And that's what I did with my bands for sure, because I didn't know what pre-production was. And so what's your experience there, Malcolm? When did you find out about the value of doing pre-production?
Well, the first time that I really put it to use was making, not the first time, but the first time my band put it to use was making our last album, Tempest, which was a long time ago. But our producer kind of, like, it was just like an insisted upon kind of thing, right? We had to provide demos and be able to adapt and try out different ideas, just communicating months before we even went into the studio. So that was really like the biggest example of pre-production in my life at that point. And it changed everything. Like, we ended up rewriting songs from scratch and changing entire courses out and stuff like that, even changing the key of the song and stuff like that. And if we hadn't done pre-production, none of that stuff would have happened.
Yeah, sure. Like, it's a weird thing, because you think that when you work on songs, when you write songs, arrange songs, you practice over and over again. Maybe you do individual, like, practice sessions on your own, or like bass player and drummer, or the guitarists practice on their own or whatever. You do all of that, so you might think that the songs are ready to record, and still, like, it's only after doing pre-pro that you really know what the song still needs and if the songs are already there. And almost always, or basically every time, there is something you could still improve, and you just don't know until you do pre-production. And I think maybe this is because of a weird, like, thing when, like, the difference between hearing yourself play and hearing what you have played when it comes back out of the speakers. I think that's a pretty big difference. And I don't know why that actually is, but it's just, you just hear your music completely different. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. Listening to your music recorded gets you one step closer to what the, like, potential audience listener would be hearing. You know, you're one step removed from being the musician that's actually playing it now, and you can kind of listen to it a little more objectively.
Sure. And you were in your notes that we always, when we prepare these episodes, we always put down some notes, and Malcolm is pretty good at that, and I'm thankful for that. And in the notes for this episode, you wrote something that I'd love to hear your thoughts on, and because it says there, like, not having it is like searching for a needle in a haystack when you get to the studio. So what do you mean by that?
So, well, let's back it up. So, because there's potentially some people listening that don't know what pre-production is even.
Yeah.
So pre-production is when you essentially record your song before going into the studio. So you have to essentially try to record your song on your own. Sometimes pre-production is actually done with the producer, but generally it's not. And for the listeners of a DIY recording podcast, it's almost definitely not. So this is you going into the studio, trying to record your song and figuring out along the way what does and doesn't work, who can and can't play to a metronome, or who can or can't play their parts even, who is playing the little transition riff into the chorus differently than everybody else. You're going to find all of these things along the way. You're also going to figure out, like, okay, my guitar sounds really crappy on this song. I'm going to have to figure out how to get a different tone. So it's also like, don't assume that all this is garbage that's going to be thrown away. You might even, or you might find, like, wow, what I recorded sounds better than what we can get in the studio later on. So you might end up keeping some of these tracks. But essentially, it is making what will probably be a throwaway recording. But along the way, you are eliminating all of these problems that would have come up and taken up a bunch of time in the expensive studio. And you're also going to end up being able to play your song to a much higher degree. So it's like a practice run of your song, with the biggest benefit being what we just talked about, that you get to then listen to your like a semi-proper recording of your song and hear it kind of as a listener, like as somebody that's not playing it for the first time, and kind of compare it and listen to it as a piece of music, not as something that you are performing, which is super valuable, because now you can kind of like look at it as a song and say, does this hold up compared to my favorite song by artist XY? You know, not having it is like searching for a needle in a haystack. It's kind of like we were talking about analogies before this, and I liked yours, Benny said that car manufacturers, before they manufacture their car and like make this, let's say the new Tesla, yeah. They will make a model of it using, I have no idea what they use. Actually, I'm not going to even say what they use because I don't know. But they make a small model of it, and you can guarantee that model is cheaper and quicker to manufacture than a real car, right? It's going to be smaller, and one person probably does the whole darn thing. And it is like a prototype. Okay, let's look at this car and see what we think. Like, will people like the look of this? Does it look like a cool car? Is it sexy? Does it like look modern enough? You know, you can kind of objectively now see this physical thing, rather than, you know, before that it's probably a painting on a computer or something like that. So that's like one step before that. So maybe the drawing on the computer is what you guys play in your band space, and then the model is pre-production, and then the actual car is what comes out of the final recording after pre-production.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? Like that, totally. The funny thing is, you said you could compare it, like you could not only get a picture of your of the final thing, sort of, or what the final thing will look like or sound like in that case, but you said you can compare it to other recordings and how it like holds up to other things you like. And so, like, one of the things that come up very often in pre-productions that I do or that I did is that you might, like, when the band plays together or when you play together in your jam space, you might think that the chorus really works and is really big and amazing, and it's fun to play, and you just think it works. And then you record it and listen to it, and then you find that it's actually pretty wimpy, and that it's not really like the transition from the verse to the chorus or pre-chorus to the chorus might not be as huge as you thought it was. And then you find you'll either have to add another layer, or you have to make the verse smaller maybe to make the chorus work or something like that. And you can check if your song makes you feel like the way that your favorite recordings make you feel. And it's hard to do that in practice, because in practice it might be enough to just step on some pedal when the chorus hits and it gets louder and you think it's a great chorus. And it's not really if you record it, maybe. And yeah, so there's already a value in there. And like, I like the needle in a haystack thing, because when you start recording without doing that, you will notice that something is missing, but you cannot really, it's hard to say what it is then, and you need to find out, but you actually want to go get through the song and get the thing done. And but then you have to search for whatever is missing, and you don't, like, you're running out of time, you don't know where to look for what is missing. And if you have done the work before and did the pre-pro, you exactly know what it is, or you can have time to figure it out. And everything's laid out clearly when it's time to record. So yeah, I really like that. Like, what problems can be identified in advance, like, that could come up during recording, other than maybe finding that like a part doesn't work or something?
Right. There definitely can be technical things that come up. I remember way back in my, like, one of my first bands, I had a guitar with EMG pickups in it. There's going to be some people listening that know what those are for sure. They were the big metalhead pickups back in the day. And they take a battery, and my battery was super dead, and I just had no idea what I was doing. And the guitar sounded crappy, I guess, because it sounded terrible. And, you know, when we recorded it and we had a DI going, we're like, this does not sound right. This sounds terrible. And of course, that was because my battery was dead. So, like, even that, you know, that's one problem fixed. So, like, you know, you might discover problems in your gear. Like I mentioned, somebody might not be up to the task of playing to a metronome. That's pretty common for first-time recording bands. It's like not everybody's on the same level with a metronome, and they definitely have to be in 99% of cases. So that's a great thing to figure out in advance before you go into a studio or before you lay down the final tracks, because if they can't, it's just not going to sound good. Like, it'll be a bad performance no matter what. So addressing that ahead of time, it's just going to save you tons of time and potentially money if you're paying for a studio. Another thing I found interesting, like projects I produced, is bands sometimes choose like too high or low of a key for their vocalist. And, you know, like the adrenaline's going while they're playing it live and they think it's all good. But then when they actually get into the studio, they realize that, like, okay, I can't actually pull this off without it sounding pretty bad. So pre-production gives us this chance to be like, okay, like, you can't hit the chorus, we got to lower this, you know, or whatever it may be. And that is like, if that's the case, you saved your song. You know, bad vocal performance means the song's a waste of time and money. So yeah. Like, you know, that's just like no brainer. If it just does that, it's entirely worth all of the time you spent on pre-production.
Sure.
One more thing that you pointed out, Benny, was, figuring out like monitoring. You're going to figure out how you like to record in this process as well. Myself, like I love recording guitars with the speakers in the studio. Headphones don't really work for me, but I have people in all the time that are the opposite of me, and they're like, give me some cans, I need to crank it and have it inside my head, just like bouncing around my skull. And they perform much better like that, you know. Maybe it's because they're used to a loud amp. Another guitarist that I record, it's a band called Shed Monkeys, they're awesome, you should check them out. But he is in the room in front of his amp, just getting blasted, you know, and that's like imperative. I would never record him any other way. so it really does depend. And that's a very cool thing to figure out in advance. So you can just go in and like get to your comfort spot quicker.
Absolutely. And people are so different, and you might not even know what your preferred way of doing it is unless you try that out. You might not know. You think you can, like, you prefer, like, have phones because you do that at home and that's what you're used to. But then maybe you are like Malcolm, and once you hear it come out of some speakers, you just perform differently and it just excites you more or whatever. So definitely try out that and try, figure out a general plan like of how to record. Figure out the monitoring, figure out if you are doing everything live or only overdubs, if you need scratch tracks, which kind of scratch tracks, like who needs to hear what? Do you need the drums only, or do you need like a mix of all the rhythm elements with the bass and the rhythm guitar maybe, and you just replace those elements as you go? Or do you want to record to a click or not? Because I agree that in most cases you should be able to play to click, and it's better. And click does not mean static tempo. That can mean tempo map, tempo changes, and all that. But in some cases, like, people who are not used to playing to click but are good, experienced musicians, and there are people like that out there, in those cases, their natural tempo changes might be good, and it might sound weird if they have to play to click. And I'm saying that very carefully, because that could also be an excuse for just not using a click. And if you just say, well, I'm one of those people. But like, it's worth figuring that out in pre-pro and comparing the results and really being honest to yourself, and then just do whatever works best for the recording. And another thing to find out is your room. You can learn your room and figure out the sweet spots in your room when you do pre-pro. When you set everything up for pre-pro, there are no rules. You're not under pressure. There's no deadline usually, or not as tight of a deadline. And you have time to move things around. You can grab a drum and walk around the room with that drum. That's a trick I like to do a lot before I record. I did that a lot in my own studio even, but when I go to another studio, I always do that. Or when I go to a jam space to record or whatever, I'll take a floor tom, walk around the room, and hit the tom and just listen to how the room reacts. Like, there are spots in the room where you have a full big sounding low end, and then you have spots where the low end almost cancels completely and everything in between. And You can find out the sweet spots in your room and figure out where the drums sound good and where the guitar amps sound good and how to set up everything if you want to record live. You can do all of that and already kind of start dialing in a sound and making sure that everything like sounds good in your room. And it's much easier to do that in pre-production and not having to do all of that when it's actually time to record, because then you might feel like you're not getting anything done because everything just takes so long and takes away from the creative process. So that's the pre-production is the place for experimenting with that kind of stuff. And in the end, you should still have a result, but it's not the final thing. It's just something you can analyze then and make decisions that you don't have to make anymore when it comes time to actually record. Hey friend, this is Benedict from the selfrecordingband.com, and if you are producing your own songs, I have a question for you. Do you ever listen to your music and feel like something is just off? Maybe the drums sound weak, or the guitar tone bothers you, maybe the vocals don't really cut through the mix, or the whole thing just doesn't sound finished and professional, but you can't really put your finger on it? I know you want to release big, punchy, professional sounding songs, right? The type of authentic, unique art that connects with your audience on a deep level. But you're just not sure what's missing with your recordings. Somehow you just can't connect all the dots. And I get it, the amount of things to learn and all the conflicting information out there can be really overwhelming. Especially if you're a lone wolf trying to figure it all out on your own, right? Now here's the good news. Whether you've been self-recording for years or you're just setting up your first home studio, I want to offer you my personal one-on-one help. As long as you are determined to put in the work, I'm offering a limited amount of free one-on-one coaching calls with me. On this hour-long call, we'll dive deep into your recordings and create a personalized roadmap for you to finally solve the issues you're struggling with so that you can release music that you'll be proud of forever. If you are ready to see and believe that it's actually possible to achieve your goals and make the records you've always wanted to make, then go to theselfrecordingband.com/call and apply for one of my limited coaching spots. I can assure you that making exciting and successful DIY records is very doable. We've done it, lots of other people have done it, you can do it as well. Talk soon, theselfrecordingband.com/call.
Yes, yeah. A lot of this can be really time consuming, like choosing the tempo, for example, of the song. Bands always play a little too fast. That's the normal thing, you know? If you watch a recording of yourself playing a live show, you're we're twice as fast as we should be. So recording it and then listening is the only way to really be like, okay, this is the right tempo. So you have to kind of experiment with that. And that's something that you don't need a producer, you know, and you don't need to do in an expensive studio. Definitely don't do that in the studio. Save yourself that time and creative energy and just get that out of the way in pre-production. And then that kind of brings me to the next point, is that a lot of this stuff can be brought forward into the studio. So you're investing in it now, but it actually is paying off in the actual recording. So like the stuff like the BPM, so the tempo, like the key of the song, and some of the tracks even will be brought forward. You know, these tracks that you record, like the scratch guitar and scratch vocal, for example, will probably be used for the actual recording session just as scratch tracks, something to play to. You know, if you're doing an overdub kind of setup, the drummer is now going to play to those that guitar and vocal that you laid down. So it's not like this is all throwaway stuff. It's all going to be useful moving forward. You might even find that you keep some of it. I know in like a previous episode, we've said to always record your like warm-up takes. Well, you always record your scratch tracks as if you're going to keep them, you know? Oh, yeah. So like try to get it right. And that definitely can and does happen.
Absolutely. And there are even famous examples. I should have looked some of those up now that I'm saying it, but maybe I'll find some and put them in the show notes, because there are famous examples of songs of productions where a track from the demo or pre-production made it on the final record and the producer just couldn't get the same vibe, the same energy or whatever into like during the final recording session, and so they ended up using whatever was on the demo, and it might not be technically perfect, but it's just something about it was just right, and then they use it. So experiment, and it doesn't have to be the final thing, but always try to record it as if it was the final thing, kind of, because you never know. It might be the best thing ever and you cannot recreate it later. So,
yeah, definitely. I'm using some scratch vocal takes on a band that I'm working with right now.
Really?
You know, we were doing the vocals over the internet and he's like, you know, I really like how it was in the scratch track. I'm like, okay, pull it up. Oh yeah, that's it. We're going to use that line. Like, not even the whole take, just stealing lines, you know. I'll figure out how to make them sound cohesive. So it definitely can happen, especially with vocalists, you know. They just, it's like they're unburdened when they just think it's just a scratched track, you know, and they just like let loose.
Yeah. I've read, I'm not sure, an interview with some producer who said that he used an iPhone voice recording on a record because the singer was just like, I think it was on a walk or something, and he just captured an idea. And that iPhone recording, when he captured that idea that just came to mind, was the best thing ever, and they could not recreate it. So he had to use the iPhone recording of that take, and it sounded crappy, but they made it sound like an effect, like it was on purpose, and used it on the record because it was the best thing. And so even that can happen, apparently.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Super awesome.
Yeah. All right. So yeah, totally. Experiment with stuff like that. Record it as if you keep the performances, and experiment with things like key and tempo. And that's something that that might sound weird because you think like the song is in a certain key. We wrote it that way. It has a certain tempo. But sometimes going up or down a couple of BPM or changing the key of the song can completely get you to a different result. And it's worth just trying that. I mean, there's nothing you can lose. Like, worst thing that can happen is yet, like, the experimentation didn't lead to anything and you just go with whatever you had. But sometimes increasing the tempo by a couple of BPM or slowing it down a little bit can make a big difference. And as Malcolm said, most bands or many bands tend to play a little too fast anyways. And also the key, if your singer cannot really hit the highest notes, or if it's too comfortable, that can also be a thing. Sometimes it's good to get to the point where you're kind of on the edge, and where, like I've said it before, I think on this podcast, where the vocal is like on the edge of like breaking, but not really. And you just hear that the singer has to fight a little bit, and that can be super awesome. And maybe you are too much in your comfort zone and you need to go up half a step or something. And then it really starts to get the energy you need. And you don't need that. You don't know that until you find out after doing pre-pro. So experiment with those things.
Also, take into consideration that your pre-production is potentially for a bunch of songs. So stuff like the tempo and key doesn't only affect that song. It affects the whole picture as a whole. So if you record or like lay out quick demos of all your songs and then realize that they're all the same tempo and key, there's a good reason to start maybe considering changing some of them, right? So it's not just about the song. It's about your work as a collection kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. I tend to forget about that sometimes nowadays because
it's
people...
It's hard, yeah.
Like, I still love records, but I get to mix so many singles and EPs, but they are not really EPs. They're just like people release them over a period of time, and like people are used to playlists and single songs and stuff like that, but you're totally right. Especially if you're doing a record. And I'd encourage you to do that, not because it's wise from a business standpoint or whatever, but just because I love it. So I want people to continue making records. So if you're doing a record, that stuff gets even more important because then you can listen to the whole pre-pro in context. And you can also start thinking about like how one song like leads to the next song, how the transitions are, how the album as a whole works. And maybe you need to change an intro or an outro to get a better transition or whatever. And that stuff gets really exciting then, because then you're getting this exciting piece of art that comes together. And yeah, that's a very cool thing to do during pre-pro also, because you don't have any chance to do that, right? Other than playing a live set and getting it right there, but it's different. It's different when you listen to it. Yeah,
definitely. Well, no, I think we got that pretty good, right? Like,
yeah.
And you know, harmonies, like really time consuming stuff like that. You don't want to be writing your harmonies in the studio, and that is so common. Just get it, figure that stuff out in advance, because then you'll know how to sing it by the time you get to the studio.
Yeah, I made that mistake a couple of times actually when people asked me to help them with their harmonies, because that happens, because not everybody, like, it's not natural to some people to do that sort of stuff. And I got asked a couple of times to help with harmonies. And before I really knew about the importance of pre-pro and how to do it properly, I would just say, sure, let's do that. And we would do it when we were recording. And then at some point, I started doing that in the pre-pro process. And I asked the band to send me this stuff before we actually started and figure it out there. Because as you said, it gets really time consuming in the studio. And it's fun for a little while, but then you just want to go back to actually recording. And it just, yeah. It's not a good thing to do that during recording. And I know, because I speak from experience here, because I've made that mistake a couple of times. And yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, same with the additional instruments or stuff like that.
Guitar solos, then like choosing weird synths. You're like, oh, I think I want to have like a choir layer back there. It's like, well, try it. Like, you know, don't just hold on to that idea until we're on the last day of studio time and you want to squeeze all the stuff in. Like hone in on what actually works, and then that gives us more time to actually focus on the performance rather than just trying different tones and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So there's a couple cool advantages that you pointed out, Benny, in the prep that DIY bands have. One, like pre-production saves you money when you're using a big studio, but in the case of being a DIY band, you're doing your pre-production probably in the same room that you're going to be doing your whole album in. Maybe not for drums if you're planning to rent a room for drums or something like that. But most of it will probably be with your home studio setup. And that means that you're dialing in the tones in the same room you're going to be in with the same gear that you're going to be in most of the time. So you're like getting to know your gear really well. You're getting to know your room really well. And you're getting to know how to achieve sounds quicker and more reliably. I work in quite a few different studios, especially for drums. And as soon as I hear like a demo with a band, I'm like, okay, I want to use this drum room. Like, so this studio to do that in, and I know where I'm going to set up the drums, and I even know which snare I'm going to grab off the shelf and rent from the studio, and what mic, you know, like it always ends up being a little bit different, but I know where to get started. And that's what's going to happen as you do this in your own studio. You're going to be like, okay, well, this is obviously a riff for the Les Paul into my Marshall, or into, I'm going to grab like this synth, because like, I have this certain synth software on my computer that is going to have the sound I'm looking for. So you're speeding up your workflow a lot by doing your pre-pro in your studio. And that is an advantage that bands that come, for example, work with me don't really get, because they have the pre-pro in their own studio and they're like, okay, well, like I could see us using this setup, but then they come into a studio with me and that gear that they liked for this particular like idea of theirs isn't available anymore. I mean, it could be if they bring it, I guess, but it is different. You know, I think there's a cool advantage to being a DIY band in that sense.
Absolutely. And just imagine what an expensive production that would be if you would go do it the traditional way and go to studio for that. And it's still the proper way. And I just listened to an episode of another podcast that I really like. It's the URM podcast. If you're not familiar with that, you might want to check it out, because they have all the great producers on there and super great, super long interviews and stuff. So go check that out. It's the Unstoppable Recording Machine podcast. And in one of their more recent like episodes, they had Eric Valentine on. Eric Valentine is a legend. He's a super great producer, engineer, mixer, and yeah, absolute legend. And he was talking about doing pre-pro with bands, and he would have the bands in the studio for 3 weeks just doing pre-pro. And after those 3 weeks, they would start the recording, or they would have a little break and analyze pre-pro and then start the recording. So they would spend full 3 weeks every day of just working on the arrangement. The songs are already written at that point, like before that. So they're working on finished songs, just improving the arrangement, improving the songs, figuring out which instruments to use, dialing tones, figuring out the room, everything. And they only do that. It's not about the recording. They're just doing pre-pro for 3 weeks. And after they're done, he says, they not only know how like the songs need to be so that they work, but they also have already dialed in almost all the tones. And then when the actual recording session starts, they just have to capture that, and it's a super efficient and super fun process, because you don't have to think about that stuff anymore. And So and think about the cost and everything if you would hire someone like Eric Valentine or some any producer or studio for like 3 weeks of pre-pro and then recording and then mix and everything. And like you can do all of that on your own in your jam space, and that's super cool. That like that's a total advantage to be able to do that in the same room just as those producers do. And that should also show you how important that actually is, because if producers like that like to spend 3 weeks with a band working on their songs, there's something to it.
Yeah, definitely. That really, I think, unveils how important it is. And if you're a band listening to this that likes working with an external producer and going to the studios and stuff like that, which is awesome, you know, it's just like, in my mind, that's the way to go, but it's just obviously way more expensive. But pre-production's like essential. Like if you want to get your money's worth out of that producer, and like, this happens to me, bands don't send me anything and they want to come into the studio and I end up with like a cell phone recording, which is better than nothing. I'll take that and I can send you ideas off that. But the bands that come to me with a multi-track and they can send it to me and I can like spend time chopping up the arrangement in Pro Tools and sending back ideas, like they're getting way more out of their money in hiring somebody like me, because they're actually doing the work and providing the producer with the files they would need, you know, to actually be able to do their job. So pre-production is important if you're a DIY band or if you're not a DIY band. It's just mandatory either way. Do it.
Sure, yeah. And you have the advantage of being able to do it in the room you actually record. So, yeah. Like, one thing we haven't touched on is like the programming reference stuff, like tuning references.
Yes.
That's also something did we talk about that in an early episode? I already can't remember what we've been talking about. But if not, just real quick, you can program a bass, for example, or some synth or subsynth or whatever. It's just something that has the chord progression of the song and that works as a tuning reference. So you can also figure out the proper setup for your instruments. You can use that during the recording process as a scratch track, as a reference track there. There's a lot of cool uses for that. And doing that during the recording session is also a huge time suck. So you should definitely do that before that. And it might also help you figure out some stuff. And maybe you program a tuning reference, a bass, for example, and then you find out that it's actually pretty cool sounding to have that sub bass programmed underneath the actual bass guitar or whatever. So by doing that, you might even come up with things you wouldn't have done otherwise. So
yeah. Yeah, I totally, that's not something I do enough, but it is a great idea. Just having this virtual instrument that's definitely in tune, because a lot of bands go wrong there on the DIY front where they just can't seem to get their basses or guitars in tune. So having this kind of virtual instrument that is definitely in tune that they're playing to, that it'll sound obviously really weird if your guitar doesn't sound good with that virtual instrument. So that kind of will help you stay on track there. You'll probably naturally play a little more in tune just because of that. And like Benny said, it can actually sound really cool sometimes. So you might end up keeping that stuff.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. For vocalists as well, having like a dead solid tuning reference for them to sing to is great as well.
Oh yeah, that's so important. Sometimes it can be actually pretty confusing. And I had this experience myself as a singer of my band, where when you have a demo and like, because it's a demo, like the tuning is not as perfect and you try to sing to it, and like no matter what you do, it always sounds off. And the reason is that like maybe the bass is a little flat and the guitar is a little sharp maybe, and like,
yeah,
what, like no matter how you sing to it, it will always sound weird, and you start to question yourself. And if you would have just like one solid reference there, you would at least know that it, like if it's your problem or if it's someone else, you know.
Yes, yeah. I definitely don't envy vocalists. You have a hard job, guys.
Yeah.
And girls.
Absolutely.
That's tough.
Absolutely, yeah. So, yeah. Before we wrap this up, there is one more crucial thing that came to mind while we were talking about all this, and that is, if you've done the homework properly, and if you've done the pre-pro, and you arranged the songs properly, and you worked on the arrangement, you worked on the setup, and you did the pre-pro, and then you listened back to what you did, you actually figure out how, like, what your band is sounding like and what it is all about, what the vibe is and everything. And that helps so much communicating to a mix engineer or to any person like that comes after that and takes over the project. Because I think communicating or figuring out what your band is really about and what you want to create and what you sound like and what's unique about your band, it's so crucial. Because ultimately, we're making art, right? We are capturing art. We are capturing music, and we want to do something unique, and we want an authentic representation of us as people, as a band, as everything. And I think you only are able to put that into words, and you're only able to communicate that to another person if you heard it yourself, and if you, as objectively as you can be, figured that out. And so after doing pre-pro, you hit play, you listen, and then you'll probably like, oh, we are actually I don't know, like a rock band that sounds pretty huge, or we thought we sound huge and we thought this is like a radio rock, but actually this sounds much more raw and like has more like this intimate kind of energy, and maybe we shouldn't go for those huge drums. We should go for a tighter, like club show atmosphere or whatever. And yeah, that's just so important. And there's no way of figuring that out without listening to you on a recording on that pre-production, and then you can communicate all of that to the mix engineer. I think that's pretty valuable there, because when I get stuff to mix, one of the most important things to me is to understand the vision of the band. And sure, the recording itself is great as well, but the band clearly communicating what they want and having analyzed themselves and really knowing what they're all about and what their art is and what is important to them and how it should make people feel, that just makes my job so much easier. And I found that the people who have figured out that like the most or the best are the ones who did proper pre-pro and just know what this band and this project is about.
Yeah, that is like, that's really the big picture stuff, you know. It is like, it's not really the technical stuff is great that comes out of pre-pro, but the like stuff that really affects the art and the ability of the band members is the best benefit. And that's going to kind of like go beyond just the song you're recording. It's going to actually help you play live. It's going to help you become better writers. You know, it's going to help you be more prepared for the next studio experience as well. It's the kind of stuff that moves you along to more and more professional of a musician and recording artist. There was one last thing I wanted to bring up.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like the different ways of recording pre-production. We won't get too into it because it would take forever. But I think depending on how complex your music is and the type of music, there's kind of different ways to go about it. But in general, I actually believe that you should do kind of two steps of pre-production. And the first would be like a live jam room recording, preferably multi-tracked. I know that Benny and I have talked about our love for the Behringer X-Air mixers, which are just like multi-track consoles that you can just record right off of. And you can just track the band live, you know, throw a metronome in the drummer's ears and track the entire band live. You end up with a multi-track recording right into your computer, and you can now listen to the song, or punch in stuff, cut stuff up, whatever you need to do. And it's really quick. You know, you all play it at the same time. Maybe with my band, we did that, but we would record the vocal after, and then I would add some lead stuff and send it to our producer. But that is like, you know, you can cut pre-pro demos of all the songs in a single jam, no problem, right? So really quick, not as accurate, not going to sound as high quality potentially, but really quick. And then the next step, I think, would be after, because what you're going to get from that is instant feedback, and you can start making quick decisions, be like, okay, well, let's just play it again and we'll do something completely different as a band. You know, it's the only way with a live setup is the only way you can make decisions that affects everybody at the same time. Where if you're doing overdub and you get to guitars and you're like, well, we should have done a different drum groove, it's really hard to go back.
Yeah.
So do that first band pre-production session and workshop the songs for a week like that, and then swap gears into the overdub setup, where like, okay, now the parts are laid out for sure. We're loving this. Now let's actually start getting things down tight. So you get drums, then you start, you know, well, the next episode is going to be on the order of recording things. So we'll have those debates very shortly. But but you know, do things one by one that time, and then start getting creative with tones and stuff like that, you know. So I would really recommend breaking it into kind of two chunks like that. One, that a pre-production session that's more focused on songs as a whole and the band's like meshing kind of stuff, and then the next half is the more methodical broken up technique, and that's where you're going to get creative with stuff like sonics and tones and technical performance.
Sure, that's absolutely true. I totally agree with that. And I would actually say do as many rounds of pre-pro as you need until the songs are finished. So it could be even more than those two or three rounds. That's totally, I'm so glad you mentioned that because I forgot about it. Actually, after the first round of pre-pro, you should analyze it, do what you've, like, implement the things you found out, then maybe switch gears and do the overdubs. And then analyze that again. And if the songs are not there already, you might have to do another round of pre-pro just until the songs are at a point where you say, okay, now they're working. Now that is exactly what we want. And now we record. Right now, for example, I'm working with a band. I'm mixing. I'm about to mix a record for them. They started doing pre-pro in fall 2019. And they did a round of pre-pro, sent it to me, asked me for input on vocal harmonies and stuff like that. And like just an overall feedback of how I think the songs and the transitions work and everything. And I sent that feedback back to them and got back to them with ideas for vocals. Then they did another round of pre-production implementing some of the things that I said. Not everything, because it's just ideas, right? But some of them they implemented and really liked. And then they sent me the second round of pre-pro. And then I got back to them with another feedback. And then they finalized the songs. And that was what they ended up recording. So, yeah. Totally. Break it down in different steps from like pure demo stage to the final pre-pro, which it should almost be the record, just not sounding as pristine maybe, but it should almost be like the final thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Like going back to Eric Valentine's method there, I would imagine that the band is set up live for those most of those 3 weeks kind of thing, because I think that's the way to focus on things if you can to start. You really shouldn't go into overdub mode until the song is finalized as like a band, you know? So start with that like live setup where you can move really quick, make decisions as a group and get feedback happening really, really quick. And then move on to the overdub once everybody's confirmed and hopefully an outside ear is also confirmed that things are kick-ass.
Sure. One caveat though that I want to add here, because with all those rounds of pre-pro and all the things you can do, especially as a DIY band, there is something, I heard some people refer to it as demoitis, which is like when people get so attached to their demos that they can't let go of that any longer when it comes to mixing or getting other people like involved in the project. And that can also be a thing. So be careful to get the pre-production to the point where it's almost the finished record, but also always stay open and try to stay a little or as much as objective as you can in that scenario and be open for input and ideas. Because if you're working with a mix engineer and that person has not gone through this extensive process of demoing and all these iterations of pre-pro and stuff, and they come up with fresh ideas and want to add that to the whole thing, you might be so attached to whatever you did that you're not allowing any like new creative input. And that can be dangerous. So, because it can get to a point where the mixer is asking like, why did you even hire me? I mean, you've already done it and you're not wanting me to change anything. So you could have just have done it yourself. And so that can be really dangerous. Keep the balance here. So work on the songs, work on that. But when you actually record then, and especially when you send it off to mixing or work with other people, if it makes the whole thing better, be open for changes. And don't forget that along the way, because you can get really attached to that if you're doing pre-pro for a long time.
Definitely. Yeah, I'm so glad you said that. Demoitis is a terrible thing that we're all capable of falling for.
Yeah.
Even like, you know, like I said that we use scratch tracks and like the keeper performances sometimes. Sometimes it's hard to give up those scratch tracks because you get used to them. And that's definitely not always a good thing. Treat your love of your demos with suspicion.
yeah, exactly. All right. Anything else you can think of, Malcolm, to add to this? Because I think
I think that's great. if you don't think you should do pre-production after listening to this, you're crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, just do it. Do it properly, and your next record will definitely benefit from that.
Yeah.
All right. That's it for today's episode, I guess. Next up, we're moving on with the actual recording process and order of things when you record. So the next step after pre-pro, everything is ready to go. And then you need to figure out what to do first and why. And we'll cover that in episode 16.
Right on. Thanks for listening, guys.
Bye.
Hey friend, thanks again for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed this one, just know that this is just a tiny fraction, a small taste of what we can actually do to help you completely transform your recordings and mixes forever. If you are really serious about your music, if you want to reach your goals as a self-recording artist, then please apply now for the Self-Recording Syndicate, our coaching program that takes you from where you are to being able to completely independently produce and release exciting sounding music forever. If you join that program, you're going to be part of a very, very passionate, dedicated, committed group of self-recording artists from all around the world, and you're going to get a roadmap, guidance, feedback, personal access to me and the team. We're going to do everything, literally everything we can to help you make the best recordings you can possibly make. And it all starts with a free first call, completely free, no strings attached. Best case scenario, we're going to end up working together and we're going to completely transform the way your music sounds. Worst case scenario, you're going to get an hour of free coaching and an action plan that you can then take and implement on your own. So if that sounds interesting to you, get started now with your first completely free call by going to theselfrecordingband.com/call or just click the link in the show notes. See you next week.